Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
You know, I couldn't find the word trust in any of the scriptures. Maybe it's not a Sanskrit term or a Pali term. I don't know. But nonetheless, the attitude of trust is vital in our practice and in any practice, any spiritual practice. So in Zen, we talk about trust. We say, trust your practice. We say, trust your true nature. We say, trust your Buddha nature. And when we talk in that way, we are really saying, trust what it is you cannot see. True nature, Buddha nature. It's important, it's vital in our practice to trust what you cannot see. So the point of our spiritual practice is to place our trust in something beyond something that we can analyze, beyond something that is solid, something that you can count. Place your trust in something that is beyond an unquestioned assurance, beyond numerical or physical evidence. When we have that trust, when we don't insist on evidence to show us our Buddha nature or true nature, when we don't require that assurance, but we trust, then we are trusting our true nature. And why do we trust it? There's no hard evidence. There's no statistics or numerical data, no database, nothing in the cloud about our true nature. But we trust it when we feel it. We trust it because we feel it. We feel it in ourself, and we feel it in others. It's a knowing that comes to us that we express through our practice, and not because we can pick up something and say, oh yes, nah, I believe in it, see? We don't require that. We trust this thing we cannot see. So our practice, a serious practice, includes trusting the true nature of everyone. Trusting everyone's true nature. When we trust the true nature of people, even those people whose everyday behaviors make us a little skeptical. And we might say, well, not sure I can trust that person all the way in daily affairs, but yet we trust their true nature. We go beyond the evidence. We go beyond certainty. We trust everyone's true nature. So in our everyday life, in our ordinary life, we trust, our trust is based on what is in the mind. Not only our own mind, but what's on other people's mind. So, trust is influenced by our direct experience. If we know personally how someone behaves, if our experience tells us that they have not been totally true to us, if maybe they behaved us, we may not trust them entirely in our affairs of daily life. And our trust is based also on our ideas. Our ideas. On somebody's reputation. You know of somebody, and if you say, well, you know, I heard something about that person, and you may be skeptical, may not trust them entirely. And then, of course, we have our own prejudices when we say, I just cannot trust people of, you know, that other political party or that other religion. I just won't trust them, even though I never met them. I just don't trust them. So our level of trust is based on various things that are in our mind. So to trust people that we meet and work with and relate to in our everyday life, that trust is a choice. Based on their reputation and our prejudices and our experience. But the job, the work of a Buddhist is to trust everyone without choosing. Trusting in their fundamental purity. And that trust is not put off by however they behave in daily life. We Buddhists relate to people based on their trust of true nature. So our daily life is complicated. Everyone's daily life is complex and confusing sometimes. And we know from our experience with each other, we know that some people can be very self-oriented, always thinking about themselves first. We know that. People become self-oriented because of their desire for wealth or something having to do with their ego. And that kind of self-orientation can create harm. So in our everyday life, we may withhold our trust from selfish people. And at the same time, there are people who are not self-oriented, not selfish in those ways, but who unintentionally create problems. And when we're with those people, we may be reluctant to give our trust because they create problems without despite their best intentions. Some people unintentionally create problems, and we withhold our daily life trust from certain people. So how can we trust somebody's true nature if we are skeptical about trusting them in our daily affairs? Because of the way they behave or because of their reputation or things like that. How do we trust someone's true nature if we are not entirely comfortable trusting them in daily life? We have to start by trusting ourselves. This is our fundamental attitude in this practice. We have to trust ourselves. trust our true nature. Even though we know that sometimes we too act selfishly, sometimes we try to push our ego, but despite this knowledge of ourselves, we have to go beyond that and trust our own true nature. This is our attitude. And when you meet someone, or you know someone who seems to be not very happy, or maybe seems to be unhappy so much of the time, it's probably because they don't trust themselves. They don't trust their true nature. So this is a very important element of our practice. To sit continuously and to develop more and more of a relationship with our true nature, so that we can trust ourselves. Trust who we are inherently. That's the basis for learning to trust others. I still remember an event that happened to me when I was in high school. In my last year in high school, all of us who were seniors, you know, had to think about the next step and to go to college, to go to work, what kind of a career to choose, all of those things. I felt I knew what I wanted to do. I was pretty sure. I didn't feel I needed to talk to any guidance counselors to help me sort that out. I know. But I was obliged to meet with guidance counselors anyhow. All seniors had to do that. And so I met with two women, two of my teachers, and they said something to me. They said, "You can do anything you want to do." I was very shocked to hear this. I felt they were giving me some kind of false encouragement, just to encourage me. I felt, it's the job of these counselors to say this. You can do anything you want. I didn't believe it. I didn't trust what they told me. But many years later, and thinking about that experience, I realized they were right. And I didn't trust them at that moment because I came to recognize that I hadn't trusted myself. I saw myself in a very limited way. So when they said, "You can do anything," that didn't fit with my image of myself. Do anything? No, I'm this. I can't do that. I'm this. I saw myself in a limited way back then. I would have trusted them, these two teachers and what they told me, I would have trusted them at the time if I had trusted myself, my inherent self. So that experience is one of the things that eventually attracted me to this practice. The practice promised that you would discover your true nature and know yourself. And the practice tells us you have to let go of ideas about yourself. we have to let go of ideas about ourselves so that we can open up to who people really are beyond their appearances. So trust in our spiritual practice is about letting go. We talk about letting go quite a bit. We always talk about letting go. Letting go of your attachments, letting go of your emotions, letting go of your images of yourself, letting go of delusions about yourself or stories we make up about ourselves. The practice encourages us to let go of those things that put a limit on our life. To let go of those things that create a wall around us and isolate us. We will not be able to trust ourselves if we are not willing to go outside of these limits that we create. And we will always be defensive about others. We will not be able to trust others who we feel are attacking our wall. It is not a simple matter to let go of these self-imposed limits, these delusions, this misunderstanding about ourselves. It's not easy to let go of the old and ingrained habits that we carry around. Our mind can be very, very stubborn, and it likes to hold on to things that give it comfort and seem to provide safety. So if we meet someone or we know someone who cannot seem to let go of these old habits and seems uncomfortable all the time, we cannot just say, oh, why don't you get over it? It's not so simple. To get over these things that we create to limit our life, we have to practice letting go. Go beyond just saying it, or reading about it, or listening to it. We ourselves have to practice letting go. So one time, some years ago, we had a workshop here, including a breathing workshop. And the instructor said, let go of your resistance. Let go of the patterns of your resistance with your in-breath. So we attempt to practice with an attitude of trust in our true nature and in everyone's true nature. And that means we sit without expectation, without any idea of achievement or success. We sit just for its own sake. We sit to express something that we cannot see, something that has no limits, that we can't measure or tie a ribbon around. Part of our attitude of trust is to accept things as they are in our life, in this moment. Doesn't mean we shouldn't make some effort to change things when we feel some improvement is needed, but we accept things as they are. And we let go of ideas of good or bad, or like or dislike. When we can let go of such judgments, then there are no limits in our life. Then we are not putting limits on ourselves. So we learn to sit in Zazen. We learn to practice in the midst of things just as they are. And we trust that our inherent and unlimited true nature will express itself, even though we are not consciously aware of it. This has to be our attitude. And this is a difficult choice to make in the modern world where we feel that we need some kind of positive result or some payoff or some notion of success. The scientifically oriented world that we're in, the technology world that we are in, we insist on reaching a known conclusion to each of our activities. So when we say, just trust that your Buddha nature will express itself, and you may not be consciously aware of it. That's hard for people. So that's why we say, just have patience. Part of our attitude of trust is to recognize that so-called untrustworthy people are suffering. They are suffering from a misunderstanding about who they are. They forgot who they are. They have not learned to put trust in their own true nature. So when we are with someone like that, it's a misunderstanding to say, this is a bad person. I can't trust this person. It's a bad person. Rather, our attitude should be, this person is suffering from a misunderstanding. This is why one of the basic teachings of Buddhism is that suffering comes from ignorance, not knowing who we are. So our trust includes forgiveness when we feel harmed by someone. When we have that forgiveness, it means we are able to let go of ideas about ourselves. And this is a very powerful attitude to have. This leads to peace of mind. Not condemning others entirely for harm they create or things they do to create problems. We know they are suffering, so we forgive. And we continue to express our own true nature. So when we don't limit ourselves, when we don't build a wall around ourselves, it means we are not limiting others, because we trust in their fundamental nature that is always present. even though there may be limits on relationships we have with other people because of the complex nature of everyday life and of everyday trust, we can have fundamental trust in ourselves and in others. With this kind of orientation and attitude, we find the greatest satisfaction. I never read anything like this in the scriptures about trust or heard a lecture about it, but I did sense it in our founder, Suzuki Roshi, when he started the San Francisco Zen Center in the late 50s and early 60s, he was surrounded by the young people of the day. And you know what the young people of the 60s were like. And I said, these people are crazy. They're doing all these wild things. Things that I don't approve of. They go beyond limits. They do things that are kind of selfish. He didn't seem to care. I said, why doesn't he care? Why doesn't he scold them? Why doesn't he teach them how to behave? He didn't because he trusted them. Despite the way they behaved in everyday life and in interpersonal relationships, he trusted their true nature, and he trusted that if they continued their practice, their life would settle down and be calm, and they would have peace of mind. Suzuki Roshi was quite unusual in that way. You always felt that when you were with him, he trusted you. Even though you maybe just met him a minute ago, he trusted you. So trusting in our true nature and trusting in the Buddha nature of others can be elusive. It can be an elusive thing. Until we have a solid, firm, and consistent practice, where we can learn to trust ourselves and learn to trust the inherent nature of everyone. Does anyone have a question tonight? Umar.
Yeah, sometimes in our lives we hear things and they don't make sense at that certain time, and it sticks with in your mind. And your lecture just brought up something for me that I had heard a long time ago, 20 or 30 years ago. And it just stuck in my mind, and it became the sort of thing that was, that I had forgotten, that would come up all the time. But there was this line that I heard from somebody, and the line goes something like this, that, stare beyond reflection so you can see the edges burn. And I was thinking what you just said about the whole trust thing is exactly what this person was saying, that we spend so much time looking at our own reflection that we don't really see the other person for who they really are. Mm-hmm. And I think this is what practice does after a while. Sitting and practicing and being with everything as it comes up, as does that, it sort of gives you the capacity to see things.
Could you say again the very first part of that little poem?
Stare.
Oh, stare.
Beyond reflection. Oh. So you can see the edges burn.
Oh, stare. Good. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
The first part of your talk was about the common thread of other, all faith systems, and the idea that trusting in what you can't prove seems like that also drives people away very quickly with the idea that, oh, well, isn't that convenient? You'll just don't ask me to prove anything, and then your faith system is, you know, a great faith system. But somehow, it seems like it's been helpful for me to flip it and to imagine that I'm really trying to avoid the entanglement of not trusting things. If I'm going to not trust you, I have to calculate how much do I know about you, and then I get involved in what I know and what I don't know, and do I know enough, and I get very entangled. And it seems like these faith systems are really a solution to the problem of induction.
Induction.
What I don't know that I don't know, and that it seems like to experience the world in an unlimited way, you can't possibly be trying to track down a proof for everything that you're experiencing, that you have to release the boundary, as you were saying, the edge or the wall, where you know or don't know, and you're going to be trusting something at that sort of unlimited way. It seems like Buddha nature and our self. Buddha says, you know, trust in our true self. Maybe Christianity says trust in this guy who's up in the sky looking down on us, whatever. But it's a way of breaking past that edge of what I know and don't know, the problem of induction.
I think the best thing to do with our life is to behave in ways that allow people to trust us. If that's one of our guiding principles, and we try to act accordingly, then we have no problem. It's a matter of being clear on how we really want to be in the world. We want to trust each other. We want to trust people because the opposite creates confusion and unhappiness. So we appeal to each other's true nature.
Les?
Yes, Lee?
I have really no problem believing that we all are born with Buddha nature and have this pure nature. You only have to look at newborn babies and observe young children, you know, to see the beauty that's inherent in all of us. But when we have people who are successful by deriding and denigrating and harming other people, and these people have power over other people, it's very hard to say, well, it's just because they're suffering. Yes, we know why they're behaving that way and why their egos are out of control. But I find it very difficult to just say, oh, well, you know, I feel sorry because that person is suffering. But that person is spreading their suffering. And it's really, it's very difficult to stay with. To stay with a calm and reasonable view. Of course, there's, you know, there's always a hopeful view that, that things, you know, will, that things can change. But I think that this is the difficulty that maybe many of us are facing right now, is to see the success of people who routinely and happily harm others.
Yeah, I agree, and that's been going on from since the beginning of recorded history. So when we have to face that question, what do we do in the face of that? I think we have to conclude that we don't help that situation or make it better by creating a war and creating an enemy. I think the way the world is now, where wherever you go, people are at odds with each other, mistreating each other, creating harm. When we wish they would be more generous and kinder. If that's our wish, how do we make it come true? We ourselves have to be the kind person and the generous person. We ourselves have to be the model of the behavior that we want for ourselves in the midst of all the difficulties that you talk about.
I can relate to this a lot. So to put some history, sometimes things go on for a while, and actually I feel like I almost inherited a mistrust because like in the workplace there was my manager's manager, and I knew that my manager had a hard time with his manager, and then he moved out, and then kind of the reputation continued as this guy is extremely difficult to work with. And I kind of got this bias, but there was also evidence to support it. I mean, lots of his people were leaving, and I kind of just always kept some distance, and a couple times I tried working a little bit with this person, but then they wouldn't keep their word or follow through with something when they didn't think it would just directly benefit them or something. So then they'd kind of try to take advantage, and then I would kind of, or they'd try to block me, and then I'd work around them. And then they'd try to block me again, and I'd work around them. And so we kind of developed a relationship of just not relating, of just kind of evading each other. And it's not like I disliked the person, because I realized they, this man, you know, he had to do his job. His job, his agenda is certain things. But anyway, I had a revelation, actually a complete enlightenment moment over the weekend. And I wasn't even thinking about this person. I just got used to just basically not really working with them. And then I had this really this idea for an important project I wanted to do. And it was like almost there, but there was a missing piece. Like something just felt like it's missing. And I had I know I have a blind spot and I'm not seeing it. And I asked a couple friends to help me work through it. And I suddenly had a realization that I was not aware of at all before, of this person suffering, this person who's a director in my company. And before, like, literally he occurred to me before like a Disney villain, like a two-dimensional cartoon, like Jafar and Aladdin, that's all there was to him. And I had a hard time relating to him, like imagining that he had a heart or empathy or anything. I really did. And then suddenly, like in one moment, I had this full understanding of of a deep insecurity, of a deep fear, of a fear of being not enough, and disappointing his family and all of this stuff I had no context for, and I actually started crying and I started sobbing for hours when I realized it, and I felt so bad for him that like I just had this thing like clear through me, and then I realized I'm supposed to work with this person, like we're supposed to work together, and that's how we'll be able to get this project done. And he's the missing piece to my puzzle. And so now I know, I was like, wow, okay. And I feel his energy shifting as well. He's more calm, more like listening, more humble in some ways, but it's like a subtle shift. And then I'm also a little bit more, I'm a little less rebellious and all the things I was being as well. And I think, like, I just know that the next step is we need to talk. Like, and I even asked a couple people for advice, and they're like, well, why don't you go out to coffee? Why don't you do this or go out to lunch? And I think we might have to talk a little bit, even though it might be awkward about, oh, you know, like, in the past when that happened, that's like, why I just felt like I couldn't count on you, but I don't want it to be like that going forward. I want to have a better relationship. So I don't have a lot of experience with these kinds of conversations, so I'm just trying to think. I want a good relationship with this person. And I think it's possible, which before I never thought it was possible, but people can change and their awareness can change, and I feel like my awareness has changed, and I think his awareness is changing as well. And if we're kind of both in the same, like we're both in product space, and if we spent the energy that we have to spend trying to work around each other or against each other, if we were actually moving the same direction, I feel like we would go really fast, like really far. So I guess just wanting thoughts and feedback on how do you establish trust in a relationship where there's been a history of mistrust and almost like a familial thing, like my family doesn't trust your family, like kind of thing like that for a long time.
You know, be trustworthy. And understand that you have no control of how the other person is or will be, or will they change or not. You have no control. You just stay trustworthy. Stay true to your own true nature. That's all you have to do. That's all. You don't have to save anybody. You don't have to change anybody. If there's any change going to happen, they will do it themselves. But you can be there to create an environment where change is possible. Okay?
Based on what Umar was saying about, he said something about seeing beyond reflection, and it occurred to me that this person might even be showing me some aspect of myself that I had disowned or not acknowledged, you know? So maybe by just being trustworthy myself, that is the best way to resolve whatever's going on with him as well. I don't know.
Yeah, simplify things. Sounds very complicated. Just when you get up in the morning, you say, today I'm going to be trustworthy again. That's it. And you go out, and you go out the door. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canandoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N. D-O.O-R-G.